Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Do we travel just for sights and food, or something deeper? Hello, 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 and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Gabe, and you are joining us for January 15th through 17th. We have three lessons all about travel. Well, that's really one lesson broken up into 3 days. This article is called Travel for the Soul, and joining me here in the studio to talk about someone's travel experiences and what they desire, I have joining me in the studio, Rhonda. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello, Gabe. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're joining me for this to talk about travel. Are you someone who enjoys traveling? Do you get a travel bug, as sometimes we like to say? You just want to get out and visit different places in the world, and has it been a big part of your past?
It has been a part of my past. Now I'm more of a homebody, we would say in English, to use the opposite of someone with the travel bug. But I have had the opportunity to do a lot of traveling
in the
past.
When people ask me if I travel a lot, I don't know what to say, because I'm like, well, compared to who? Because I know a lot of people who really like to travel, and they probably get out 2 or 3 times a year to different places around the world. And that's never been me, you know. Maybe I'll visit somewhere, another country, once a year, or maybe once every 2 years. You know what I mean? Yeah, but whenever I go, well, now I say we, because it's often with my wife and my kids, of course. But, you know, it's a lot of fun just to get out and go different places. So you said you used to travel a lot, Rhonda. What are some of the memorable places you've been? Maybe places you would go back to if you had a chance, or just places that you really enjoyed traveling to.
Sure. Well, when I was in college or shortly out of college, I got to travel around the continent of South America. Seems so long ago, but a backpack on my back and blue jeans on, and traveled to 9 different countries over a period of 5 months. So nowadays, I guess we'd call that maybe a travel blogger or something. This was before the era of blogging, but it was a trip to understand the local cultures, and I did a lot of writing in a journal. Maybe if there had been laptops back then or whatever the device, maybe I would have written about it and sent news home, but I had to write in my journal and then told my friends about it later.
Do you still have that writing somewhere lying around, Rhonda?
I do. I actually wrote a manuscript. It's not a book that got published, but I put it together with a 3-ring binder thing, and I called it Along the Andes.
Along?
So yes, I could share Along the Andes.
Why not?
With
that
you.
Would be great.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I think this article, Lebawit Lily Girma, she obviously enjoys writing. Mm-hmm. She uses some very beautiful, colorful writing in this article, which we will talk about it, and she obviously enjoys observing
the cultures
she's in, noticing details, and then putting those down. So perhaps that's something our listeners would like to do more of, is observing the details around them and maybe trying out some English in writing it down. So maybe they'll get some ideas from this article.
Yeah, well, I think this article is written in kind of an interesting way, because this writer, Lebawit Lily Girma, she not only talks about, you know, the places she would like to go, but also lists some specific cultural experiences that she would like to enjoy while she's in these different places, which tells me she's a very intentional person. You know, she not only does her research about the places she's going to go, but she also, yeah, really finds what might be interesting to her particularly, and then we'll go and try to do those things. We're going to find out a little more about that as we get into our lesson, into the reading. Travel for the Soul. Before we get into the reading, though, Rhonda, let's talk about this title, To Do Something for the Soul. What does that mean?
That means that part of you that's not visible, that's not really measurable, not just your body, not just your mind for academic interest, but for that part of you that feels deeply, enjoys art, responds to friendship and love. Your soul is that immeasurable, intangible part of you. So in this article, she's really focusing on, as the deck says, personal connection, relating to other people, understanding other people. That's not something that has to be physical or just intellectual, but yeah, enjoying people, feeling love, feeling affection, feeling warmth.
Mm-hmm. Very well said, by the way, you know, talking about that intangible part of us, the soul. When I think of doing something for the soul, it's like doing something for my spiritual benefit in some way. You know, so maybe I'll go listen to some live jazz, for example. That could be good for the soul. And you could travel for many different reasons, friends. You could travel just to get to know other cultures. You could travel just to relax on a beach somewhere. Or maybe there's something deeper. Maybe there are deeper reasons to travel. And that's what we're going to get into with our lesson today. So travel for the soul. Here we go.
Travel for the soul. Tourism with a personal connection. Air passenger travel hit a new record in 2025, proof of our collective and unquenchable thirst for exploring the world. Like most, I have a long wish list of places I'd like to see this year. Some are all about the jaw-dropping landscapes or delicious foods, but cultural exchange is the real motivation behind most of my travels. I love tapping into community-owned and led activities that put me in direct contact with locals, which ensures that my tourism dollars make a positive impact and that I walk away with a first-hand understanding of local traditions. It's both a fun and responsible way to travel. I aim to strike that balance with every journey.
All right, tourism with a personal connection. Our first sentence reads, air passenger travel hit a new record in 2025. I don't know, should I be surprised by this? Are you surprised by this, Rhonda? After COVID hit 5 years ago, you know, people were, they couldn't travel during that time. And then all of a sudden there was this phenomenon people called revenge travel. They couldn't travel for 2 years, 2 or 3 years. And so then they started traveling a whole lot afterwards. But this year, or last year, 2025, is it surprising that it hit a new record?
It's interesting to me. I wonder how much of that relates to people's ability to work remotely, so they don't just travel during that vacation period they might get in the year, but maybe people are traveling, taking along their laptop.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that. For some reason, when I think of travel, I usually think of vacation or holidays, but you're exactly right. Working from different places, working remotely, that could be a reason for this as well. So it's a proof of our collective and unquenchable thirst for exploring the world. Unquenchable thirst, those words kind of go together because they're very related. What does it mean if it's unquenchable?
It cannot be satisfied in our definition here. An unquenchable desire is one that is impossible to satisfy. So we do say unquenchable thirst, unquenchable desire. I literally sometimes have an unquenchable thirst when the weather is hot.
Yeah, like no matter how much water you drink or how much other, you know, like super superpower or whatever you drink, you need more, right?
Right. Your thirst cannot be quenched.
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that use of the word quench, to be quenched. That means to be satisfied in some way, especially when it comes to thirst. So a lot of people have a thirst for exploring the world. Like most, I have a long wish list of places I'd like to see this year. A wish list. When I think of wish lists, my mom used to get in touch with all of us, actually still, even to this day sometimes, like she wants us to write out our wish lists for Christmas. Basically, that means any of the things that we'd like that maybe somebody in the family could buy as a gift. So that's right. Our Christmas wish list. Did you guys ever do stuff like that?
That's how I think of the use of the word as well. That, you know, we might say, this is my wish list. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it with a little bit of a smile in our hearts
right,
or our voices.
Hoping that somebody buys you the present.
You know, hint, hint, these are all the things I want. So she has a long wish list of places she'd like to see. And she says, like most. In other words, all of us, whether we write it down or not, all of us, like most, have a long wish list of something we want.
Yeah, and some of them are all about the jaw-dropping landscapes or delicious foods. They're basically the, you know, those places that everyone wants to go. They're on postcards. They just look really beautiful. That's jaw-dropping is very impressive. It's very surprising. You could think of it in literally a way, something that makes your jaw just drop. It makes you go, wow, when you look at it. Like when you visit places like the Grand Canyon or Taroko Gorge, it's just a jaw-dropping experience.
Your mouth just stays open. That lower part of your face, your jaw just stays open because you have no words for what you're seeing.
Yeah. Another word we might use is awe-inspiring. They kind of mean the same thing, or we use them in the same way. But cultural exchange, we read, is the real motivation behind most of my travels. When you think of cultural exchange, Rhonda, what do you think of?
Well, I usually think of someone comes to my culture, I go to theirs. There's some kind of a trade or exchange. So cultural exchange might be just conversation about.
Almost like a language exchange.
Yeah.
About different cultures.
So it sounds like she's talking. In that sentence, it would make me think, oh, she's going to offer something about herself in that culture. And she's going to, as it were, take, you know, again, for her soul, take something from that culture. And she says it's the real motivation behind most of my travels. So what really motivates her to travel is wanting to get and perhaps give something back to the culture.
Yeah, that's the idea I got as well. A lot of times you go traveling just because you want to get, right? You want to relax on a beach somewhere. You just want to get away from everything, not really think about responsibilities. But when you're thinking about a cultural exchange, there is this idea of giving as well. We're going to find out what the writer means exactly as we go along. She says, I love tapping into community-owned and led activities that put me in direct contact with locals. So I like that phrase, tapping into. This means managing to use something in a way that brings in good results. So she's trying to, you know, figure out what those community-owned and led activities are, and she's going to get involved in some way that will hopefully be good for her and for the locals that she is in contact with. She's going to be in direct contact with locals, which ensures that her tourism dollars make a positive impact and that she walks away with a firsthand understanding of local traditions. Well, Rhonda, you know, when you go traveling and you're buying local things, isn't that making a positive impact? Just doing that, buying local things, buying local food, supporting the local economy, that in itself is making a positive impact, right?
Yes, it is. I know we're hearing more and more these days about what happens when too many tourists come to a place. Mm-hmm. There can be a negative impact of people just coming and not really being respectful of the fact that people actually live there, the local population, the locals. Notice how she says in direct contact with locals. That's a way of saying the people who live there. Mm-hmm. So there can be definitely a negative impact, but she's talking about ensuring that her tourism dollars make a positive impact and that she, I like how she says, walks away with, she means returns back home with a firsthand understanding of local traditions. She really wants to be respectful, and she calls that a fun and responsible way to travel. She aims to strike that balance. I think that balance would mean the give and take.
Yeah.
Is that what you see?
Yeah, for sure. I get the idea. She, you know, with a firsthand understanding, that's having direct experience with something, not just hearing it from somebody else. That would be secondhand, maybe. But a firsthand understanding is she wants to have these very direct local experiences there. So she does try to strike that balance. That's often how we talk about a balance. You want to strike a balance. Maybe you need to strike a balance between your work and then your family life, you know, things like that. Well, we are going to get into the next section right now. It's all about Egypt.
Egypt. I'm eager to see more of the African continent, where I was born and raised. Of course, I'd visit the iconic pyramids of Giza and the new Grand Egyptian Museum. But from Cairo, I'd head to Aswan, a city on the Nile in southern Egypt, to visit Nubian villages that sit on the West Bank and are known for vibrant murals, blue and orange painted mud houses, riverside cafes, and local markets. On Agilkia Island, I'd continue toward Abu Simbel, home to giant statues and temples built by Ramses II. Splurging on Luxor's hotel, Al Mudira, would make for some worthwhile relaxation after all the adventure. The cultural experience I most want to try: a day trip to Ramses Wissa Wassef Art Center in Haranye, village in Giza, where I'd watch and learn from women artisans who create colorful hand-woven tapestries.
Friends, there will be an exam at the end of the month for all of these difficult words that appear in advanced articles. I am just kidding, of course.
Teacher Gabe, don't make me pronounce those words.
Trust me, we teachers would lose as well. We would not score well in remembering how to pronounce a lot of these different names that appear in this section. And of course, we're going to see, you know, anytime you have a travel article or a lesson that takes us to different places around the world, or where we're learning about things that come from different cultures, we're going to be introduced to some names that we're probably not going to know how to pronounce, right? But that's okay. We are learning, and I think that's just important to have an open mind, you know, whether you're learning or whether you're traveling somewhere. So in Egypt, we read, I'm eager to see more of the African continent where I was born and raised. So we're getting a little bit of personal information about the writer here, the author Lebawit Lili Girma. She was born and raised in Africa. But of course, she says she'd visit the iconic pyramids of Giza and the new Grand Egyptian Museum. What does iconic mean, Rhonda? If something is iconic, like the pyramids of Giza.
Yes, they're so famous. Famous in a way that they represent the whole place. The iconic pyramids. You see the pyramids, that is the icon. That is the ultimate symbol.
Yeah.
Of that place.
So, by your definition, what would you say is one of the main icons of the United States? Or, what's an iconic symbol?
The White
there?
House, if you saw the White House. Mm-hmm. That's what first occurs to me. What else, Gabe?
The White House. The first thing I think of is the Statue of Liberty.
Sure, of course, of course.
Maybe places like the Grand Canyon or like Yellowstone or something like that. But yeah, these are great ways that we could use that word iconic to describe these kinds of things. But we read, from Cairo, I'd head to Aswan, a city on the Nile in southern Egypt, to visit Nubian villages that sit on the West Bank and are known for vibrant murals, blue and orange painted mud houses, riverside cafes, and local markets. That sounds fun to me. Just going to visit a place that has that seems very chill, Rhonda. Mm-hmm. It has these riverside cafes, local markets. Are those the type of things you enjoy visiting?
Yes. I like to relax and talk to people. Mm. So, I should say, I also like to tour museums and quietly read and look. So I guess I like both sides. I like to see those iconic things and just quietly take and observe and see the art. But I do love connecting with people, real people. So if I was in one of those little villages, what does it say, those riverside cafes and local markets, I would enjoy people watching.
People watching. Mm-hmm. That's an activity that is fun. It's not an official activity, right? It's just what you end up doing when you're sipping coffee or tea, in a place like this, and you end up just observing people. We call that people watching. But our lesson continues here. On Agilkia Island, I'd continue toward Abu Simbel, home to giant statues and temples built by Ramesses II. If it's home to, that means these things can be found there. Nowhere else. They're found here. And what about that word splurging we see in the next sentence, Rhonda?
She spent a lot of money. She splurged on. It's more than she meant to spend, but she decided to spend a little more than she could afford.
Yeah, and sometimes it's okay to splurge, you know. Obviously, you want to have a budget, and most of the time you want to stay in your budget, but splurging is kind of the opposite. It's kind of maybe for special occasions.
Mm-hmm. We often say, hey, let's splurge.
Yeah.
Right?
What does
we
that
say,
mean? Let's splurge.
You know, let's splurge. I want ice cream.
Okay.
I know it's, you know, we just ate a nice meal, I'm imagining.
Yeah.
But hey, let's splurge. It can mean spend more money or just do an extra something that's a little bit extravagant, especially.
Yeah.
Now let's splurge and have ice cream.
Right. Let's splurge. Basically, kind of throw our normal rules out the window mm-hmm. for how much money we're going to spend mm-hmm. and just really enjoy the moment. And I think that's what she's getting at here. The cultural experience I most want to try, we read, is a day trip to Ramses Wissawasif. Again, you don't have to memorize this pronunciation. But the art center in the Harania village in Giza, where I'd watch and learn from women artisans who create colorful hand-woven tapestries. Oh, wow. Well, a tapestry is basically a large piece of heavy cloth. There's a lot of different colored threads that are woven to produce some kind of a picture or a pattern or something like that. Have you ever done something like this? Any kind of art that requires weaving something with your hands?
Yes, I have. I've done a lot of stitchery over the years. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that she says, I'd watch and learn from. So she's watching the women as they are weaving the tapestry. And I imagine those women are really focused in on the details of what they're doing, because a tapestry does imply a lot of detailed stitches. So she's watching them do it, and I imagine that's a very hard work and very hard on the eyes is what I picture. So she seems like a traveler who really respects what the local people are doing.
She respects what they're doing. She appreciates what they are doing, and she wants to put in the time to actually kind of be in the moment with them as well. So this is great. So far we've gone to Egypt. Let's go next to Greece.
Greece. The Greek islands have been on my radar primarily because I have a friend in Athens. I love the idea of skipping Santorini and Mykonos and opting for low-key Paros. I'm drawn by the images of rocky beach coves along the Aegean Sea, but also by the local taverns and Lefkas village in central Paros, with its car-free streets and cycladic architecture featuring whitewashed walls and blue-colored shutters.
Greece. All right. A lot of people, when they think about Greece, they think about Santorini and Mykonos. Those are the party islands, or that's what we call them anyway. But before we get into that, let's talk about something from that first sentence here. They've been on her radar. She has a radar, Rhonda? What is this phrase all about?
Well, it means that I've known about it and I've noticed it the way an airplane might notice something in the sky because it has a radar system. Mm-hmm. So it's a fun way to say, that's been on my radar. I've been meaning to do that. And she has a friend in Athens. She says, I love the idea of skipping those two famous islands. So this tells us something about her. She's not going to go to the famous place where all the other tourists go. So she says, I love the idea of skipping those. Kind of a surprise to others. And opting for low-key Paros. That opting for is a good English phrase, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Opting for means choosing. When you have many options, then you have to choose one, right? So you opt for one over the other. She's opting for Paros. Incidentally, I've been to Paros.
You have. Listen to you, Mr. World Traveler.
I know, right? No. Several years ago, I went with my older sister. We went to Athens, and we wanted to go to one of the Greek islands. There's 6,000 of them. There's only about 200 or 230 or so islands that are inhabited. And so of all the islands that we chose the same one that our writer here was writing about. And Paros, what made it interesting was that it was not a party island. It was low-key, just like the writer says here. I remember having a really nice, actually, it was Italian dinner on the beach with, like, at a table, but the waves were, like, coming up to our feet, that kind of thing. And we saw the kids playing with their families up until like 12 midnight. It was just really sweet because, you know, other places you think, okay, kids got to be in bed like by 8 or 9, but everyone is just really enjoying themselves. It was low key. It was chill. I would recommend, you know, going to Paros. If anybody is not sure which Greek island to choose, you can choose Paros. You will not be disappointed. But how does our lesson continue here? She's drawn by what?
By the images, the beautiful view of rocky beach coves. Those would be like little inlets of water. Mm-hmm. I think of a beach, along the Aegean Sea, but also by the local taverns. Now, those taverns are bars, but it's a little bit more of a little bit different feel from a bar.
It could be a different feel, and it could just be the name. Sometimes a bar will have the name tavern in it, but often it is basically the same thing. So these local taverns and then we see Lefkes Village in central Paros, which with its car-free streets, that means there are no cars there. If something is something-free, like I'm having a sugar-free snack, that means there's no sugar in the snack. Well, these streets are car-free. And we read about this word Cycladic architecture. This has more to do with the age that these kind of buildings came from. This is several thousand years ago. And they feature whitewashed walls and blue-colored shutters. And this is exactly the picture that comes to mind when a lot of people think about Greece, is these white and blue buildings. Well, friends, that is all the time that we have for today. It's not all the time we have to learn about the writer's experience in Greece, because she's going to continue with the next part, and especially the cultural activity she wants to enjoy in the next part of our lesson, and that is going to be tomorrow. So, friends, my name is Gabe.
My name is Rhonda.
Saying, see you next time.
Bye-bye.